The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello and happy Monday to you. Hope you're getting ready for a great week. This is Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you for joining us. So we're taking questions from listeners just like you, and we got an interesting one. What is the role of women in church? If you have your own question that you'd like Bob or Sean to answer, hope you'll send it to us. You can reach us through email, radio@faithalone.org. Now, before we move on, I'd like to tell you about our upcoming National Bible Conference. It is a great experience every year, and we would love to see you there. You can find out more about that by going to faithalone.org and clicking on events. You can even register right there on the site. We look forward to seeing you there. Well, let's see what Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar have to say about this one. Here's Grace in Focus.
All right, welcome to Grace in Focus. My name is Sean Lazar.
Hi, I'm Bob Wilkin.
And we're taking your questions on the Bible and theology. Here's a question from Deborah, and she says, what biblical context is given for women at the Lord's Supper? What is the role for women at the Lord's Supper? What can they do there?
Okay, well, it's not universally agreed, obviously, the role of women in the local church or even the idea of the Lord's Supper meeting. So let me suggest to Deborah and to anyone that's interested, go on our website, faithalone.org, and look up role of women in the church, women keeping silent, that sort of thing. You'll see multiple blogs and articles by me on that subject. And so, Deborah, you can get a lot more information there. One of the places you would go would be 1 Corinthians chapter 11, starting in verse 17 to 34, dealing with the Lord's Supper. And it doesn't actually get into the role of women in the church. However, Paul does get into that as he continues in chapters 12 through 14, and he gets into women in the church in chapter 14 and verse 34. Let your women keep silent in the churches, for they are not permitted to speak, but they are to be submissive, as the law also says. And if they want to learn anything, let them ask their own husbands at home, for it is shameful for women to speak in church. Now, whatever you consider church, Paul is talking about this. Now, some people say, well, Paul was a misogynist. He hated women. Some people say, well, this was just a cultural thing in the first century. It doesn't apply today. I would say, no, Paul was speaking within God's intent. And if you go over to 1 Timothy chapter 2, Paul picks up on the same idea. And he says, again, women to learn in silence with all submission, chapter 2 and verse 11. And he brings up Adam and Eve and the creation account. And so I guess my point would be this. Women can have any ministry in the local church that the Lord allows. And basically, the Lord allows women to have any role in the local church other than they can't be an elder, because elders in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 are to be the husband of one wife, and a woman can't be that. So, and they're to be, of course, males and older males. They're to be presbyteros, refers to an old man. So I would say 40 and up, but theoretically you could be a little bit younger and still be an old man. But women can't have the role of an elder, and they also can't be the speaker in whatever you consider the meeting of your local church, which for most local churches today, that would be Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11. Maybe they have two services, or 11 o'clock. And most churches would say, hey, women can have any role you want up until the time the preaching starts. So lots of churches have women praying. They have women make announcements. Women give a little devotional before they sing a song. So it depends on your church and what you understand. But in a Plymouth Brethren type church, the Lord's Supper meeting would be from the beginning of the meeting, when they break bread and they share the bread together, until through the teaching time and through the prayer time, and then taking of the cup at the end. All of that, women would be silent. So it really depends on your denomination, your church, but the idea that women are not to be elders is pretty widely held. There are some Bible churches now that do that, but for the most part, most Bible churches would say women can't be elders. They could be deacons. Some churches teach women can be what are called deaconesses. You know, women can have all kinds of ministry in the local church, just not the ministry of being the main preacher in that service. Outside of that service, as far as I'm concerned, Sunday school or home Bible studies or classes they offer, women can teach all those.
All right, here's a question from Doug. Doug says, I'm doing a study of Colossians 2, 16 to 23, and I was wondering how much this passage can be applied. Can it be applied to music genres, clothing, styles, etc., or does it only apply to food, drink, religious festivals, new moons, and Sabbaths?
Okay, maybe you could read it, Sean. Obviously, before we even get into it, all scripture is profitable, 2 Timothy 3:16. So every scripture can be applied. Yeah, so go ahead and read it.
I guess, first of all, what's Paul's argument here? He's basically saying they shouldn't be caught up in all this legalism, right?
Well, most people say that Colossians, there were three major false teachings that Paul was arguing against. One was a Jewish legalism. One was some sort of Greek asceticism.
Pagan, yeah. Mystery religions with the rules and regulations.
And there was a third one, too. I can't remember what the third one is. In any regard, when he says, let no one judge you in food or drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or a Sabbath, well, that would apply certainly to Jewish legalists, but it would probably also apply to some of the ascetics.
See, I wonder, because look at the next verse, 17, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substances of Christ. I don't think Paul would say a mystery religion was a shadow of Christ. But that's certainly true of Old Testament law. I mean, the Old Testament law prefigures Christ and points to the Messiah. And he says, let no one cheat you of your reward, taking delight in false humility and worship of angels, intruding into those things which he has not seen, vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind, and not holding fast to the head, from whom all the body nourished and knit together by joints and ligaments grows with the increase that is from God.
Well, now, the worship of angels was something that did occur in Jewish mysticism. The Kabbalah, I believe today, still worships angels.
Yeah.
So that, well, could have been part of the Jewish legalism aspect
of it. Some type of Jewish sect type thing. But here's the takeaway in verse 20. You died with Christ from the basic principles of the world. Why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourself to regulations? And isn't it true that Christians are always jumping over themselves to subject themselves into new regulations? Like right now, the whole spiritual formation movement is drawing from Roman Catholic and Orthodox monastic practices and trying to come up with all these new rules to be spiritual. But here's what Paul says, quote, do not touch, do not taste, do not handle, which all concern things which perish with the using according to the commandments and doctrines of men. These are just human commandments, right? These things indeed have an appearance of wisdom. It sure seems like, wow, this wise guy is telling me, a wise guy.
Yeah.
this wise man is telling me, oh, if I just, you know, don't eat red meat on Fridays, I'm going to be a lot holier. An appearance of wisdom in self-imposed religion, false humility, and neglect of the body, but are of no value against the indulgence of the flesh. All of these rules and regulations, Paul says, does not help you whatsoever. It doesn't help you become a better Christian to do all these rules and regulations.
And so Doug's question is, how do we apply this?
Well, can it apply to music genres? Can it apply to clothing styles? I guess he's thinking, let no one judge you. You know, if someone says, oh, you're listening to Norwegian death metal, you shouldn't do that as a Christian. Maybe he's thinking, don't let anyone judge you about that.
Did you just make up Norwegian
death metal? No, I read about it the other day, actually.
What?
I just read about it. So apparently it's extremely dark. I don't listen to that type of...
Well, yes, you could apply this to, let's say some people said that you need to wear clothing that's extremely irritating in such a way that it makes you holier. In fact, didn't some of the ascetics, like the monastics and stuff, didn't they wear coarse clothing?
Yeah, what's it, hair shirts is what, what do they call it? The context is spiritual growth, right?
Right.
And what is Paul saying? He's saying don't fall for the trap of thinking your spirituality depends upon these rules. And maybe is he thinking, like, if you're one of those people who refuses to, let's say, get engaged in spiritual formation and go on that retreat to learn about how to be a monk, you know, in the urban environment.
Right.
Don't let anyone judge you about that. Is that the type of judgment you
think
he's talking about?
I would think so.
But he's not talking about, like, hey, if you show up at church in like a bikini and people are like, hey, put on some clothing. You know, Paul wouldn't say, okay, now you go to this verse to say, hey, don't judge me.
No, I think the application needs to be tighter, because what he's talking about here is practices that are self-imposed, legalistic religious practices Scripture don't talk about. That would be don't eat, don't touch, don't taste.
Yeah.
You know, don't eat bacon. Don't eat red meat.
So
don't
someone,
eat any meat on Friday.
So
right?
If someone was like, hey, what's the season right before Easter?
Lent.
It's Lenten season, so we're going to obey all these food laws. And you refuse to do it. And those people are now judging you. I think Paul would say, don't worry about it.
That applies here.
Yeah.
Right. And I would think you could apply, as in terms of Doug's question, something about clothes that were designed to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So that you'd be more spiritual. And I think you might be able to apply it to music. There are people who say in the contemplative movement that we should listen to praise music, right? And the praise music oftentimes is, they call them 7-11 songs, seven words repeated 11 times.
Like, to you, that would be torture.
To me, it would be torture. But not only that, I would say that would be some sort of self-imposed religion, because you're trying to become spiritual by doing something that the Scriptures don't tell us to do.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
In other words, the Scriptures, if you're going to sing, and it's funny because, you know, it wasn't until about 1800, I think, in Europe and the United States that songs began to be other than Scripture. Up until then, most all singing in the church was the Psalms
put to music. Right. But you would say, so coming back to this, a wrong application would be to use this passage to just as an excuse just to do whatever you wanted.
Licentiousness. Yeah.
This is not an excuse for saying, hey, you can't judge me for getting out of church discipline, for example. You know, hey, I can't be subject to church discipline. Look at Colossians chapter 2. That would not be a correct application of this passage.
No.
All right. Doug and Deborah, any more questions, go to our website, faithalone.org. And we have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of articles on just about everything. Look up your passage, look up your question there, and if you still have questions, then send them to us at radio@faithalone.org.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax deductible and very much appreciated, because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. On tomorrow's episode of Grace in Focus, we're going to talk about the relationship between eternal security and being disciplined by the Lord. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep Grace in Focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.